Hello and welcome back to the Impenetrable Fortress podcast. This is episode 8 for week 5 of the NFL season. And this week, I think we're going to start off with a little talk about our shutdown government, because that's related.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for those of you who know, we have a football team that plays in our nation's capital, and I'm pretty sure they're all paid by the government of the United States.
Yeah, I think it's the national team, right?
Yeah, they're all government employees. You know, they're like GS-9s or something like that, pretty high up on the pay scale.
Yeah, but exactly. So how do you think, is this move to shut down the government going to improve or harm the Redskins' defense? That's the real question here, I think.
That is a really good question. The answer is it really can't hurt them any more than they've already hurt themselves. I think that, you know, so the players all, they were called in today for 4 hours to make sure that their lockers were all secure and that their top secret playbooks were all locked up and everything, ready for the shutdown. I think they're not officially allowed to answer emails from Mike Shanahan today, but I think they've got their phones on them just in case there's some kind of a team emergency, like they figure out how to stop a passing team or something like that, you know.
Makes sense to me. I think that's why they haven't been answering our calls as well.
Yes, yeah, obviously. They usually return our calls pretty quickly, but
yeah, I think that was a preparation thing. You know, the last week or so, they've been a little distant. I think that maybe they were not happy about us sass-talking them so much on this podcast, but yep. I don't know. Again, as you said, it really can't get worse. I mean, would you agree that if the Redskins were unable to field a team, their defense would do better than it's been doing so far?
I would give you better than 50-50 odds that that statement is true, I think.
If they had to hire private contractors or whatever, off-the-street free agents to replace scabs, basically.
Exactly, yeah. You know. Scab football right now is the best thing that could possibly happen to Washington football, I'm pretty sure. I think that, firstly, it would give RG3 some time to figure out what's going on in his life and his football career, and also it would give the defense something to look at and say, oh, that's what defense is supposed to look like. I get it now. I get it. And then they probably play better.
All right, well, let's move into the recap of last week, and we'll even start with those Redskins. How does that sound?
Yeah, we can do that. That sounds good. So, the Redskins played the Raiders last week, as you know.
They won.
Yeah, they did win a game. And now, I know that perhaps at the beginning of the season, you were willing to claim the Raiders were the worst team in football. I
definitely said that a bunch of times.
Quite willing to write them off quite that much. I told you that they had 6 wins in their roster somewhere. I'm not 100% sure that that's true anymore, but they've had...
I've been skeptical of that from the start, but yeah, sure.
They've had that one win, right? And, you know, yeah. And I was... even though I am a Redskins fan, I was sort of truly worried about this week for my dear beloved Redskins. We had many advantages in our favor. The fact that we are almost in every metric possible a demonstrably better football team.
Yeah, except for defense. Yards allowed.
Yeah, that we are the worst. But also, you know, and this is never a good thing to find joy in players' injuries, but Terrell Pryor not playing certainly helps the Redskins, because whenever you're playing against Matt Flynn, your chances to win go up pretty substantially. Even still, boy, did that game look like it was going to be a disaster in the beginning.
Yeah, it was interesting. They fell way behind, and then, I don't know, the Redskins defense stepped up and stopped the Raiders, or just what happened there?
Yeah, I mean, it's like... it is almost as though the Redskins learned how to play really quickly there after that first quarter. I hesitate to actually say that it is the case that the Redskins' defense learned how to play because, well, I'm going to need a little bit more proof before I'm willing to commit to that statement. But it certainly helps that Darren McFadden didn't play much in the second half.
Yep.
It certainly helps that Brandon Merriweather was being his ridiculous self and flying headfirst all over the field and never getting called for anything. At the same time, I mean, so some of the Redskins rookies stepped up this week. We had a rookie cornerback, Amerson, step up and get a whole interception this week. We had good play from the front seven, which is actually not surprising. That's the one aspect of the Redskins defense that I think is actually particularly good.
Yeah, though, of course, we like their cornerbacks for fantasy, just not so much in the real world.
Yes, that is definitely true. D'Angelo Hall lived up to that, I think. He's stupidly good in fantasy and sort of just stupid in the real world. Ryan Kerrigan, I have a stat here. Ryan Kerrigan, right, has been playing like a monster. He's already got 5 sacks
this
season.
Is that the stat?
That's the stat, yeah, that he is playing like a monster. Like some sort of Godzilla or something like that in the field. No, but he's on pace for 150 total tackles this
season. I know,
it's
crazy. It's really crazy. So do you think that's a sustainable level of performance, or would you try to sell Kerrigan if you could?
I would personally hold on to Kerrigan. I think that just unless something pretty significant changes on the defense, unless something significantly changes on the offense, the defense is going to be on the field a lot, and Kerrigan has proved that he can make a lot of plays. He's like, you know, big name in there, and I think he's going to be pretty spectacular. Perry Riley, too, also putting up some pretty good numbers.
Yeah, I talked him up after that first week. I think he's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. His stats are much more sort of in the safe. He's racking up tackles rather than getting sacks range. So Perry Riley might be a person you might want to pay slightly more attention to than Kerrigan, just because his production seems more reliable.
Yeah, I think Kerrigan, if you could trade him for like a top 10 linebacker, I think you'd want to do it. But otherwise, I'd probably hold him.
Yeah.
He's been good.
Yeah.
He's been reliable.
Yeah.
I had no takeaways from Oakland from this game. Lamar Houston continues to be good.
Yeah.
The rest of the team continues to be inconsistent.
Yeah.
I think it's a, you know, we thought that there was going to be someone who stepped out from that team and became useful, but maybe it's just not going to happen.
It's looking less and less likely that that's going to be the case. I mean, there's no standout player on the Raiders that isn't Lamar Houston, and I just don't see, I don't really see who would be the standout player, given, you know, even if we could assume that one of them might have a sort of spectacular resurgence as the season goes on. But, I don't know. I still think that the Raiders, I would revise my 6-win estimate down to like 3 at this point, but I don't think they're the worst team in football.
Yeah, I don't either. Unfortunately, I guess when I made that claim, I did not quite understand just how bad Jacksonville was.
Yeah, that is a thing that was hard to get your... It's hard to wrap your head around.
I still have them second worst, but, I mean, not worst.
Not worst. That's the thing. Go Oakland. Not worst.
Yeah, that's what their fans are going to be cheering at 11:30 p.m., I think, Eastern Time. 11:30 p.m. Eastern Time due to the Athletics game.
Yes, I did.
Does that affect anything? Do you worry about that stuff with fantasy?
I don't. In fact, if anything, it gives the players a little bit more time to sort of get sorted in their day. I think it allows them to play better. I do remember, this is sort of unrelated to the Raiders, but I do remember that last season there was a statistic that came out near the end of the season that showed that Matt Schaub can't play at night. Like,
yeah,
his
that
stats
was weird.
In the daytime were totally different from his stats at night. I don't think that happens to anybody but Matt Schaub.
Yeah, you hear a lot about, like, West Coast teams traveling east, but that's for early games.
Right.
And their game is the Chargers, who's also a West Coast team, so I think they'll be pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, no
on
one's traveling.
Game.
Basically, all that they're doing is playing a night game.
Yeah, so. Good for them, I guess.
Yeah.
Got an extra night game due to their city's baseball competence.
Yeah.
I think we should move on to what's probably the biggest defensive news of the week, which is that Vince Wilfork of the Patriots has torn his Achilles tendon and is likely out for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
This is a defense that we both thought was pretty good.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
That had been playing very well. They shut down the Atlanta Falcons, who I know you think is a good team. I was more skeptical on, but still was impressed with what the Patriots did this week. I read a stat, though, that told me that Vince Wilfork, when he's been in the game for the last, I think it was 7 years or something like that, it was a long period of time, the Patriots have allowed something like 4 yards per carry. It was like 9th in the NFL over that span. And when he hasn't been in the lineup, they've allowed like 5 yards per carry, which doesn't sound like much more. It's one more. But that puts them like 30th.
What?
Almost last in the NFL. Whoa. So, I don't know, but do you have feelings about the overall effect on the Patriots' defense that losing Vince Wilfork is going to have?
You know, I have to say that I think I was really impressed with... They lost Vince Wilfork, and they actually cycled through yet another defensive back who is not out for the season, but got hurt during the game and couldn't return. They went through two rookie defensive tackles, both of whom acquitted themselves pretty well against the Falcons, who, I've been claiming they're actually a decent team for this whole season, basically, and I'm beginning to have doubts about that. Although I have to just say that the Patriots are, as much as I absolutely hate to say this, the Patriots are doing really well with... They have something like 14 rookies in their first and second string on both sides of the ball.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. It is amazing. I mean, and I know this is defense blog, but I just talk about the offense for a second. Tom Brady, as much as I hate him, has four receivers, three of whom are rookies, because he's so far down. They're so far down in their depth chart at the receiver position that he's throwing to a fourth-round draft pick, a sixth-round draft pick, and an undrafted free agent. Those were his three top receivers last night. And it's just amazing that they can produce.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
And it's sort of the same story on the defense. I know, obviously, that's not Tom Brady's fault, but maybe credit Bill Belichick or something like that. But the defensive rookies are stepping up amazingly.
Yeah, they definitely scout
well.
You know, they find these players.
Yeah.
And, you know, I watched a few Patriots games this year, somewhat in depth, and Wilfork was a player I looked at specifically in a few of them and actually thought that he had not looked like himself. So I'm not really buying that stat that I gave earlier. I'm not convinced that that's going to really hold true in this case. I just think that...
You said that was over the last 7 years, right?
Yeah, it was over a long time period, and I just am not convinced that that's what's going to happen here. I think that they may legitimately have replacements for him.
Yeah.
Do you have feelings about how this affects the other players on the defense at all?
Not particularly. And I think it's because what you were saying about how the Patriots are so good at scouting. I think that you can, even if Wilfork was playing maybe at close to the top of his game, they have people who they can stick in those positions that allow the defense to function functionally the same. It's sort of the interchangeable parts theory of defense.
Yeah, which is really good if it works.
Yeah.
And personally, if I was an offensive coordinator trying to attack the Patriots after this news came out, I would try to run up the middle more.
Yeah.
I would also be doing that because Aqib Talib has played really well.
Oh my God.
I mean, basically
I would keep the ball
shuts
so
down
far away from him.
Yeah, I mean, he basically shuts down Julio Jones all night.
Yeah.
In a very impressive performance. And
right.
He more or less
makes the game-winning play for the Patriots on that last
And we've talked about him for fantasy a lot. He was a player we thought was kind of too good to be useful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it may come down to that against teams with only one good receiver, he's going to have good games.
Yeah.
You know.
Because they're going to want to have to throw to their guy
anyway.
Yeah,
it's the same thought we had with Patrick Peterson earlier in the year. So that's good. Anyone else you want to talk about on the Patriots? I think that pretty much covers it. I'm not really moving any players around other than taking Vince Wilfork out, but that was already happening. He was not rated high in terms of fantasy. So.
Right. He'd not been putting up the fantasy points anyway.
Yeah.
We can, for you 49ers fans out there, I think we can safely say that Navarro Bowman has made his statement that he
I almost forgot about
still
that
a good
Thursday
football
game.
Player. Yeah.
Yeah, he's tremendous. Tremendous game. They basically cover for not having Aldon Smith or Patrick Willis by blitzing Navarro Bowman a bunch of times.
Yeah,
he gets
more
two
or less
sacks.
Every single play.
Yeah, two sacks, a ton of tackles, just a monster game for Navarro Bowman.
Yeah. Now, so the question is how much of that is Bowman realizing that he needs to step up his game and playing better, and how much of that is the Rams being totally unable to run the football and trying to anyway?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But in any case, I think that, you know, we said going into the week that this was the week Bowman had to show that he was better than whatever he was ranked 20th or so among linebackers at that point, and he totally did it.
Yep, I think
he's right back in there in the top 10 for me.
Yeah, definitely. definitely.
And even if Willis comes back, I mean, he was top 10 overall last year with Willis in the game, so yeah. I'm not even concerned about that.
No, me neither.
I like it. I'm right back in. Sometimes it just takes 1 week to be right back in.
Yes.
You want to talk about some players that we didn't talk about enough in the preseason from the Baltimore and Buffalo game, James?
Yeah. Basically, everyone on the Buffalo defense, I think, deserves to be on that list. It's really crazy.
Yeah. They're without three of their top, or, you know, their four projected starting defensive backs. Jairus Byrd, who we had, like, sixth among safeties, still hasn't played.
Yep.
And they're shutting teams down. Kiko Alonso, I think, the number one linebacker in our scoring system.
I believe that is true. He is amazing. I'll say that I did promote him at the beginning of the season, if only because he was a rookie. Even I, in my constant boasting of rookies, could not have predicted this kind of a season. He's having a spectacular season.
Yeah, and their team is boosted in this game by a bit of a Joe Flacco meltdown, but, you know, the Kiko Alonso stuff and the Denoris Searcy stuff, I'm totally in on those two.
At least those two
players. And the linemen as well. Mario Williams and Kyle Williams.
Yes.
And Marcel Darius. I'm in on all of those players.
Yeah, there's nobody on their defense that I don't really like right now. I mean,
I'm not picking up the safeties at this point just because I think that they're eventually going to be replaced by people. But, you know, if you need someone this week, Bill's safety. Why not?
Yeah. Right?
I mean, they've proven that they can succeed.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's all you need. On the Ravens side, I think we should issue a formal apology to our listener, David, who wrote in to tell us that we were crazy about Arthur Brown and that it should all be Daryl Smith. And he's the third best linebacker in our scoring system and has another double-digit tackle game this week.
Yeah, so, David, you were right.
I mean, I guess our mistake was we thought that he wouldn't be starting at inside linebacker.
Yeah.
And he is, and he's been spectacular.
Yeah.
And he should be as long as he's healthy. They're not going to take him out with that kind of production.
Yeah, no. He's great. I would keep him in.
Yeah, God. I mean, if he's out there in your league, pick him up. If he's not, if you've got him, start him. That's all there really is to say about that. The rest of the Ravens team,
I am unimpressed.
Suggs, I think, is useful as like a bye week guy, maybe like a third linebacker or something like that.
Yeah.
Haloti Ngata has not really put much up.
No.
The safeties, cornerbacks have been kind of a disappointment. I mean, I guess some of those cornerbacks are scoring okay, but it just...
Yeah. Lardarius Webb is scoring all right, though he was hurt, obviously, at the beginning of the game last week. Corey Graham put up a good game last week, but I think that kind of production is not likely to be something he's going to repeat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very much lukewarm on the rest of the Ravens' defense at this point.
Yeah.
You know who I am super excited about is the Titans of Tennessee. Holy cow. My God.
Maybe we should have taken them on as the official team of the podcast or something.
Yeah. In fact, if we can still make that decision, I would like to.
It's been pretty exciting. I took them in an eliminator challenge last week. I said, you know what?
Yeah.
There are bigger favorites this week, but the Titans are not losing to the Jets.
No, they're not.
They get a bunch of turnovers. One of my favorite turnovers I've ever seen, when that guy with the behind-the-back Geno Smith play.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Geno Smith, you know, the pressure gets to Geno Smith, who's in the end zone, and in order to try to avoid a fumble, he tries to pass himself the ball behind his back.
Yeah, that's great. It's pretty spectacular.
Great, and they get interceptions, and they get everything. I don't know. The Titans' defense looks very solid to me.
My God, yeah. So, Alteron Verner is maybe the most exciting cornerback in all of football right now. He's got four interceptions on the season. He's got, you know, like 15 total tackles. And it's ridiculous because he hasn't had, like, a bajillion interception game. He's, like, sort of consistently getting interceptions.
Yeah, he's been very reliable.
Which is something that is kind of incredible to see out of a cornerback. And Bernard Pollard, late of the Baltimore Ravens, leads the team with 29 total tackles. I mean, he's just playing spectacular.
I didn't buy him coming into the year, but I don't know. I guess I have to at this point, right?
Yeah.
We're a quarter of the way through the NFL season, so I think I have to buy it.
Yeah, I mean, what else are you going to do? Their linebackers are doing well. They're, you know, not top tier producing linebackers, but they're definitely like number two starters.
Yeah.
The safeties are, I mean, Bernard Pollard, the other safety is, but cornerbacks are good. The Titans are just a really exciting team right now.
A solid all-around team. I think that this is the Greg Williams team, right?
Yes.
I think that that has really helped.
Yes.
I think that they've been able to produce schemes that have really helped them. It will be interesting to see if, as the year goes on, those new schemes start to get figured out by teams, but...
Yeah. That's
for
true.
Now, anyway, we like this defense a lot.
Absolutely. With Jake Locker being hurt and Ryan Fitzpatrick entering the game as their captain, it really only makes me want to watch them more, just because when Ryan Fitzpatrick is on the field, God only knows what's going to happen. I mean, it's like it's a confluence of events that just make the most exciting things in football all present in one place.
You may be the only person in the world who gets excited by the premise of Ryan Fitzpatrick starting a game, but sure, why not?
Yeah.
I'm more interested in watching defenses against Ryan Fitzpatrick than watching Ryan Fitzpatrick.
That's
but
true.
Sure.
It does, Ryan, this whole, the Jake Locker being hurt last week does bode well for my D'Angelo Hall 4 interceptions off Ryan Fitzpatrick prediction.
That is true. There's at least he is a starting quarterback now. Uh-huh. I still don't think they play.
I'm 100% sure they don't play, but it's still possible. I think
it's at least closer. If they could trade D'Angelo Hall, maybe they'll try to load up on draft picks for next year. D'Angelo Hall's a little bit on the older side. Maybe they'll trade him out to some team that plays, you know, to the Texans or someone that's been struggling a little bit.
That's what I'm saying.
Could happen. All right. It's good to see that that's at least in play still, sort of.
Yeah.
Not really, but a little bit.
A little bit.
All right. I'd like to talk about two safeties in the Denver-Philadelphia game. Denver dominates this game through and through, but I just want to put it out there that Nate Allen is our 14th safety in scoring and has been very consistent. In fact, his last 3 weeks have all been right around 10 points.
Really?
Yeah, I think that with cornerbacks who are not tackling well, Nate Allen can be a reliable member of your team if you're looking for a safety. On the Denver side, Duke Iheanacho, who I talked up really excited about him after the first week, he had two bad weeks, one of which at least I warned you about.
Right.
But I think that any game where you think Denver is going to get way ahead and opponents are going to have to throw, he can have
he's
a good
do
week.
Well.
That's been the common thread for him. And that he's healthy. That's also,
that is also
important.
Yeah.
But so, for example, James, do you know who the Denver Broncos play? Not this week, but next week.
I do not.
What if I told you that it is projected to be the largest line in NFL history at 28 points?
Is it possible that they happen to play Jacksonville?
Not only do they play Jacksonville, James, but they host Jacksonville.
Oh, dear.
They play Jacksonville
Lord.
At home with a projected opening line of 28 points, and I will love Duke
Iheanacho
in that game.
Not only do I love Duke Iheanacho, I will take all 28 of those points and the Broncos.
Yeah, go figure.
Holy cow. That game is going to be, I don't know, spectacular might not be the right word for watching that game, but I mean,
it's going to be something.
Yeah, he has shown us this year that he is uncompromising in his will to score points. So,
that is certainly true.
I pity the Jaguars.
All right, do you have any other recap stuff you want to talk about from last week?
Nah, we're good.
All right, let's move on to the matchups.
Yeah.
It seems only appropriate that we begin our defensive matchups for the week by talking about what looks to me to be our favorite defenses, two of our favorite defenses matching up against each other. Chiefs at Titans.
Oh my god.
How many total points do you think are going to be scored in this game? These are both teams that have scored some points, but not really proficient offenses.
No.
And very, very accomplished defenses this year.
Yeah. So, like, one
it's gonna be a 1-0 finish.
Yeah. And it's gonna be one of these technical things.
Some rule that we've never heard of. It's still buried in some rule book, and Andy Reid comes out like, no, I'm just kidding, Andy Reid would never know that. So that can't happen. Two, I guess. Yeah. Maybe, how about a 4-2? Could this be a good old-fashioned 4-2 finish?
Yes. You know what? In fact, that's officially my prediction for the score in this game. I'm not sure. I'm not super sure. I think I would go with 4-2. As much as I like the Titans, I think that the Chiefs' defense is slightly more likely to get those.
It'll bring the Chiefs to 5-0 if they win this. And I agree, I think the Chiefs pass rush is still, you know, is the stronger part of their team, whereas the Titans, I think the coverage is stronger.
Yes.
Let's see. So how does that kind of shake out from a fantasy perspective for two teams that, normally I think we would be kind of concerned just that, you know, you're playing against, for example, the Titans or the Chiefs, maybe your defense isn't going to be on the field enough, but someone's defense has to be on the field.
Yeah, it's true. And I think, so from one point of view, I mean, the Chiefs get Ryan Fitzpatrick to try to murder in the backfield. And
yeah, which I think they will be successful at. I like Dontari Poe and Tamba Hali both for this week.
Absolutely.
Especially with four teams on bye.
We know that Ryan Fitzpatrick is a total disaster at making decisions. So I think that even the Chiefs secondary is probably going to get some exciting opportunities.
Yeah, maybe this is one of those games. So the problem with the Chiefs secondary is that Brandon Flowers is in the too good category.
Well, so, but here's the thing. Does Ryan Fitzpatrick know that? Does Ryan Fitzpatrick care about that?
So maybe this is a week, but that hurts fantasy owners, though.
Because
I don't think any, you know, even if you think that's going to happen, unless you're really in a bind with the bye weeks, and there are four teams on bye.
Yeah.
But unless you're really in a bind, I can't imagine starting Brandon Flowers.
It's true.
Just can't do it based on his production so far.
Yeah.
The other weeks when he's played, he's not scored well, even when he's matched up one-on-one on a top receiver.
Yeah. I mean, the case that he's just too good, basically, for fantasy. Eagles-Giants. I don't know what to think about that game. This is like the one week when I might say, stay away from playing players against the Eagles, because the players you have to play are the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, Prince Amukamara has been reasonably consistent.
Yeah.
Antrell Roll had a good week last week, but has not been consistent.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't see a big game from Jason Pierre-Paul, because I think that the Eagles' whole scheme is designed to kind of limit sacks.
Yeah, for sure. That high-speed stuff, just even if the pass rush is good, it can't get to the quarterback fast
and
enough.
It hasn't been good.
And,
so.
Yeah, the Giants' pass rush is terrible. So, and, you know, conversely, maybe this is a week to start Eagles' front seven. I mean, we've seen some pretty spectacular things out of DeMeco Ryans and Michael Kendricks.
Maybe we have Trent Cole at times as well. So, yeah. That may be a good call. Maybe that's the real value.
That's the real takeaway from this game is Eagles front seven against the Giants.
Yeah, I'm so afraid of the Giants. Like, one of these weeks, they're going to have an offensive explosion and just dominate some team. But
yeah.
I don't know when.
Who knows?
Be this week. I mean, if it was going to be any week, you'd think that the Eagles defense would be the one. But it is true that we said that about Carolina. Or at least we said that privately. I don't think that made it on the podcast, but
no. We
said that about Carolina, who was missing all of their starting defensive backs at the time, and they didn't do it there because the front seven was too good.
Yeah.
Eagles' front seven is not as good as Carolina's, but it's pretty good. I mean, it looked really good that first week against the Redskins. It's looked decent in the other weeks.
Yeah. Again, DeMeco Ryans and Michael Kendricks have been solid producers.
Very solid interior. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not definitely not optimistic about the Giants getting their run game back together this week, but they might still be able to pass on the Eagles. It should be interesting. I wonder, do you know who's favored in that game?
I do not. I don't have
I don't
a line.
Either. It's probably pretty close.
Yeah.
I guess so. We're not going to look it up, so look that up on your own, podcast audience.
Yeah. Jerks.
Let's talk about an exciting defensed night game. Texans at 49ers.
Yeah.
I think those still count as exciting defenses, right?
Well, the 49ers definitely do. You know what? Actually, yes, they both do. Because I think both of these defenses are ones that we have not been able to feel comfortable in our evaluations of.
Yeah.
I mean, the Texans obviously have not been performing at a level that anyone expected them to.
No, although I think mostly that's the offense. J.J. Watt is rightfully reclaimed his spot as the number one defensive end in our scoring.
Yes.
Which is exactly where he belongs. We said he would get there. He had kind of a slow start, but
right.
He's rightfully reclaimed that.
Brian Cushing has has surpassed asserted
even that, your yeah. high expectations for the year.
Exactly. He has asserted that his injury is not a problem.
Yeah. And, it's interesting. I think that the Texans' problems have been that their defensive backs have not been as good as they were mm-hmm. last year. I think that losing Glover Quinn and replacing him with Ed Reed has not really worked out, which we said in the preseason was going to happen. But I don't really think that San Francisco is well designed to take advantage of that. I mean, Anquan Boldin works underneath.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, and the Texans linebackers are pretty good.
I mean, he'll get lined up with cornerbacks. I mean, they'll move him around outside and, like, do stuff. I don't think he's going to get shut down or anything, but I don't think it's going to really murder the 49ers the way that, for example, the Colts did.
Yeah.
You know? So, I guess I don't really have that much more to say about the Texans. I think that really it's just you want to start those two players. I'm not really buying this other defensive end on the Texans who had a good week last week. I think Mercilius, something like that. I like to pronounce it Merciless, but I'm pretty sure that's wrong.
Let's go with that, though.
All right, Mercilius. I'm not really buying it, though.
Yeah. You
know, I think that it's kind of like the Cameron Wake situation where the other pass rushers on the team will have good weeks.
Yes.
But not all the time, and not reliably.
Right.
So you're just kind of stuck.
Yeah, I think...
But yeah, I'm very comfortable with the 49ers at this point. Although, do you want to talk at all about what's going on with Eric Reed? Why has Eric Reed kind of suddenly gone from 10 points a week to 4 points a week?
Well, he had that concussion back in week 2.
Between 2 and 3.
Anyway, between 2 and 3, he had that concussion. And I wonder if that hasn't... if that experience hasn't shaken him up sort of fundamentally. I think he didn't have any significant injuries in his college career, and I think this is like sort of the first time he's had to face the realities of playing in a rough and tumble, arguably bad for people sport.
Yeah. Like football.
And I think maybe he's just hesitant to get back to his old form.
All right. So, I mean, would you rather play, for example, Eric Reed of the 49ers or Nate Allen of the Eagles at the Giants?
This week, I would rather play Nate Allen. I think
I would, too.
Yeah, I easily see the Eagles getting out ahead and the Giants having to throw all night long. And Eli has, you know, somewhere buried in the amorphous blob that is Eli Manning is a good quarterback. He's proved it in the past, but hasn't shown up this year. And secondaries have been taking him apart.
I agree.
So I'm going to go with, I would go with Nate Allen over Eric Reed.
Very good. Let's talk a little bit about a player who had a good week last week that I think will not have a good week this week. That player is Julius Peppers, who had his first really good week of the year last week.
Yeah.
But I think that playing the Saints this week, coming off a loss, I think he'll be plenty motivated, but I just think that players, despite what we saw last night, which was an unusual number of sacks against Drew Brees, Drew Brees really doesn't take very many sacks. He's very aware, he releases the ball quickly.
Yeah.
So, while I think Julius Peppers is going to be good overall this year, I'm not particularly excited about him in this matchup.
Yes, and I really like Miami's pass rush, and I am not so excited about the Bears' pass rush. I think that
losing, they lost that defensive tackle, Henry Melton, for the year. So it's kind of Julius Peppers and then them trying to do stuff with the linebackers and trying to get production out of the other guys on the line who really aren't that great.
No,
so.
I think that, as much as the Bears love to tout their defense, I think that their pass rush is not so hot this season. And I think that Drew Brees is a quarterback savvy enough to take advantage of not top-notch pass rushing.
Yeah, so here's an interesting question for this game.
Yeah.
You are a Chicago Bears cornerback owner. You have either Tillman or Jennings.
Yeah.
Right. Do you look at this as a good matchup because the Saints throw a lot, or a bad matchup because they can throw to Sproles and Graham, or, you know, because they move players around? Like, how do you view a game like this?
It's really hard to say. I think that, you know, my gut is to say that this is not a good matchup for Bears cornerbacks. I think that Drew Brees is a savvy enough quarterback that he knows he's coming in against two of the best cornerbacks in football right now. And he's going to hit, you know, he's going to throw the ball over the middle of the field. And
yeah. I agree.
Just don't think they're going to get a lot of targets. I think there's no reason to target them unless the Bears can really step up their like middle of the field coverage. It just doesn't seem like that's a decision that Drew Brees is going to want to make or going to have to make. So,
yeah, I think you probably still have to start them just because they're so good.
Yeah,
but
maybe.
I think this is kind of a trap game. You know, it looks like a really good matchup, but I don't think it is.
Yeah. I will say there's just one more game that I want to talk about. It's the Thursday night game this week, Bills and Browns.
Thursday night games have been so good so far this year.
I know, but hear me out. Okay, Bills and Browns, two of our most favorite defenses.
That is
two
true.
Two of the youngest defenses. Two of the best named defenses. Against rookie quarterbacks who are playmakers, right?
So, I mean, Brian Hoyer, not a rookie, but... His first year as a starter,
and he's looking to make a name for himself. So,
and
EJ Manuel has been really good, but he's also still one of these players who is trying to make plays. And so, I think this is two teams with good defenses that are playing teams with offenses that afford defenses lots of opportunities to make plays. I think that this is going to be a kind of, from a defensive perspective, this is going to be an exciting game to watch.
Is this the week where Barkevious Mingo makes his Defensive Rookie of the Year bid?
I sure hope so. I think that
Well,
he's had the bruised lung, and they've been limiting his snaps because of that, but
yeah.
I think that he's got to start playing sometime. No, you know, not to make light of the fact that he was coughing up blood at the end of the preseason, but...
No, I mean, it's a serious thing, and they need him long-term, so,
exactly.
You know, you don't want to put him in for more time than is safe or that the team is comfortable with. But.
Exactly, but I think this is a good week. If it doesn't happen this week, I'm not 100% sure that it'll happen before the middle of the season. I mean, just, it seems like...
Yeah, the Barkevious Mingo love has not really... Not really.
It's not shown up. Yeah.
But if you like defense, I agree. This should be a fun game to watch. I think, at least from a defensive perspective, the offense maybe I don't know. The offense in these Thursday games in general has been. Yeah. So, I think this will follow right along with that. So that's probably all the time we have for the preview. Thank you for listening to the Impenetrable Fortress podcast. Our theme and interstitial music is Dear Liza by Ned and the Dirt. You can get their album Giants on iTunes or CD Baby. Our podcast is produced and edited by Sarah Gonzalez. We release under a Creative Commons license, so feel free to share with your friends. You can also email us questions or comments at podcast@alanjackaway.com. We are going to try to remember to do rankings this week. We did not get to it last week, so apologies for that. But hopefully we will have weekly rankings this week so that you can, you know, spend your time with the government off planning your fantasy dominance.
As you all should.
I think we're really glad, in all seriousness, that the National Football League is not run by the government
this particular week. No, as much as we complain about Roger Goodell and stupid things that the league does, it would only be a bajillion times worse if it was actually run by the nation.
Here's a related thing that we have not talked about before. How do you feel about Condoleezza Rice and her bid for NFL commissioner?
It's so far out of left field that I am 100% behind it. Like, I don't even know what her qualifications are. I don't even know how being a Secretary of State translates into being an NFL commissioner, but it's just such a bizarre thing that I am for it 100%.
I feel like in the past, people haven't really run for that position. Like, it's been a thing that someone kind of just got placed into. Like, maybe there's some back alley stuff, but there's, like, this very public bid that she's mounting to become the next NFL commissioner. It's kind of interesting.
It is. It really is.
I feel like I need to watch a debate.
Between her and other
Or
candidates.
Goodell, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Goodell's out in 2015, no matter what. So.
Right, that's true. So, but I don't know who the other candidates even are.
Right.
It's kind of interesting.
Well, maybe we should propose you for candidate NFL commissioner. I think you've got the chops for it.
Yeah, there'd be some changes. First and foremost, ties coming back.
All ties.
Not all the time. I'm just saying... You know, it's a vicious game. Players want to be able to play less. How about no overtime during the regular season?
Seems reasonable.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to figure out if it's a thing, you know, how many signatures you have to get to run.
Yeah, you know, right.
See if we can get kind of some kind of special election thing going.
Mm-hmm. Count me as your first signature. Yeah.
All right.
Dear listeners, please email us your signatures to the podcast at podcast@alanjackaway.com.
Yeah, I don't know how you email a signature, but go ahead and do it.
Yeah,
we'll
just
take
do it. Yeah.
Just put in the subject line, you know, Alan for commissioner or something.
Yeah.
I'll come up with a slogan maybe for next mm-hmm. week.
Maybe we'll petition the White House or something. Yeah.
Sounds good. Mm-hmm. All right. Very good. Enjoy your week 5, everyone. From Alan.
And James.
Stay low.